Incredible.
Luther Galloway was astounded that his masquerade as Claudius Turnbuckle had continued unchallenged for a couple of days. He kept waiting for someone to tell him that he was too young and too incompetent to possibly be the esteemed attorney from San Francisco. In the meantime, though, he was enjoying getting to know Diana Woodford, who was proving to be as charming as she was beautiful. He was getting a considerable amount of satisfaction out of preparing Tip Woodford's case for trial, too. He had always enjoyed doing the legal research that Mr. Turnbuckle called on him to do, and he had assisted in the writing of enough briefs so that he had no trouble getting the facts of the case down in clear, logical fashion.
Mr. Morgan.
When he left the hotel on Monday morning, the day before the judge was due to arrive on the stagecoach, Luther found Frank Morgan waiting for him on the porch.
Had breakfast yet?
As a matter of fact, I haven't, Marshal.
Run over to the cafe with me, then. Best flapjacks you'll find anywhere in these parts.
Well, that sounds appetizing, I suppose.
Wait till you wrap your gums around them. You'll think you died and gone to heaven.
Luther walked down the street with Morgan, cutting across its dusty width diagonally to reach the cafe. They went inside the neatly kept establishment, which was doing a brisk business. A couple of tables covered with red checkered tablecloths were empty, though, and Luther and Morgan took one of them. A young blonde woman, a little plump but still extremely pretty in a gingham dress and white apron, came over to them and greeted them with a smile.
What can I get you and your friend, Marshall?
You have any preferences?
Whatever you think is good.
All right. Big stack of flapjacks, hash browns, and plenty of bacon for both of us. And a pot of coffee.
Strong enough to get up and walk off under its own power?
You bet.
The blonde went back to the kitchen. Luther saw two other women working there. One of them a redhead with a ready smile, the other a brunette who was a few years older.
An attractive blonde there. So are her co-workers.
Lauren and Becky and Jenny used to work in one of the houses in Virginia City before they came here. Not sure where all they'd been before that, but I'm glad they decided to settle down in Buckskin. They're hard workers, and this place has the best food you'll find in these parts.
You say they worked in a house?
That's right.
You mean a house of ill repute?
Yep. And you don't have to whisper. Just about everybody in town knows about it.
And yet they continue to patronize this establishment.
Why wouldn't they?
But those women used to be...
Lots of people used to be lots of things. Out here, folks don't care all that much about what somebody used to be. They care more about what a fella or gal is now. That's all that really matters, isn't it?
Yes, I suppose so.
Their breakfast arrived, the plates weighted down with food being carried to their table by the blonde, Jenny Carlson. Morgan introduced Luther to her, and he managed a polite smile, even though he couldn't quite banish thoughts of her previous profession from his mind. The redhead was Becky Humphreys, Morgan informed him, and the pretty, dignified brunette was Lauren Stillman. The food was as good as Morgan claimed, which came as a bit of a surprise to Luther. In fact, it was as good as anything he had ever had in San Francisco, a city known for its fine restaurants. The two men ate with gusto, and then lingered over cups of coffee, which was as strong as Jenny had promised and quite bracing.
How's the case coming along?
Quite well, I think. Mr. Whitford and I have spent a lot of time going over the details, and I have an idea about how to prove that Brighton's claim on the Lucky Lizard is a phony.
How's that?
Luther hesitated. He trusted Frank Morgan. After all, the man was one of the law firm's most important clients. But he wasn't sure that he wanted to share his strategy until he knew more about whether it was going to develop the way he hoped. He was saved from having to decide one way or the other by a sudden commotion from the street outside. Luther and Morgan both glanced toward the cafe's front window, and they saw a buggy race past the place.
That was Conrad's buggy. Something must be wrong for him to be running those horses like that. I better see what's going on.
Frank started for the door, lifting a hand in farewell to the three young women who ran the cafe.
I'll be back to settle up with you later, Lauren.
No hurry, Frank. I reckon you're good for it.
By the time Frank got outside, Conrad had brought the buggy to a stop in front of the marshal's office. Catamount Jack, who had been in the office while Frank was having breakfast with Claudius Turnbuckle, came out to see what the ruckus was about. He was talking to Conrad as Frank strode up, and Frank saw now that Garrett Claiborne was perched on the buggy seat too, holding a Winchester. Frank knew from talking to Conrad the night before that his son had intended to visit the Crown Royal Mine this morning. Obviously, something had happened out there that was bad enough to bring Conrad and Claiborne racing into town.
Looking for me, Conrad?
There was an attack on the mine.
An attack?
Several men opened fire on the buildings and the tunnel entrance from the cover of the trees. We put up a fight, of course, and after a few minutes, the gunmen fled.
Did you see who they were?
I never got a look at them. Just saw their powder smoke. I asked the rest of the men, and they never saw them either.
Conrad, how about you?
I'm sorry, Frank. I don't have any idea who they were or why they attacked the mine.
It doesn't make any sense. Only one man was wounded, and that was by a ricochet. Several miners were out in the open when they started shooting, and if the bushwhackers wanted to kill him, they could have without much trouble.
Garrett, are you all right? Somebody told me that you and Mr. Browning were in that buggy that raced by, and I thought there might be trouble.
I'm fine, Diana. Puzzled by what happened, but unhurt.
Oh, thank goodness. My first thought was that there had been a cave-in or something like that out at the mine.
No, it wasn't a natural disaster at all. Somebody took pot shots at us instead.
Somebody tried to kill you?
That's what we were just talking about. Sounds to me more like they were trying to throw a scare into you, Garrett.
Maybe, but if that was their goal, they failed. We put up enough of a fight to send them packing in a hurry.
I'll ride out there and take a look around. Might be able to find something to tell me who they were or what they were really after.
I'll go with you.
No, I need you to hold down the fort here, Jack.
Seems like that dang fort needs lots of holding down these days. Blame thing must be light as a feather.
Why don't I go with you, Marshal?
Well, I don't know if that's such a good idea.
I'd like to see some more of the area around here. This seems like the perfect opportunity to do so.
This won't be a sightseeing, John. Could be dangerous.
I don't mind. I promise to be careful, though, since I still have to represent Mr. Whitford in court and crush Brighton's fraudulent claim.
Well, if you're bound and determined, you'll have to have a horse, though. I reckon Amos Hillman would be glad to rent you a mountain saddle.
Excellent.
Can you handle a gun?
I'm an adequate shot with a rifle.
Let's hope that's good enough. We'll go see about getting your horse.
I'll pick up a mount at the livery stable, too. That way Mr. Browning won't have to take his buggy back out there.
Be careful, Garrett.
Frank might have been wrong about it, but he thought he saw something flash in Claudius Turnbuckle's eyes when Diana embraced Claiborne. That would explain why Turnbuckle was suddenly so anxious to help him track down those bushwhackers. The hombre wanted to impress Diana. This might be trouble in the making, Frank thought. Now he not only had to try to track down those bushwhackers, but he also had to ride herd on a young man who wanted to make an impression on a gal. That just might prove to be the most dangerous part of the job.
Easy, boy.
Luther Galloway worried that he was getting in the habit of making impulsive, downright foolish, and potentially lethal decisions as he contemplated the horse standing in front of him. Catamount Jack shoved a rifle into some sort of leather scabbard attached to the saddle.
Here you go. Got 15 rounds in her, so you ought to have plenty of ammunition.
Thank you, Deputy.
No offense, Mr. Turnbuckle, but I wish I was going with the Marshal instead of you. It's been too blasted long since I got to swap lead with any ring-tailed hellions.
Growing up his courage, Luther grasped the rein and the saddle horn, put his left foot in the stirrup, and swung up onto the horse's back. Amos Hillman, the livery stable's proprietor, had saddled and led out the big brown horse, claiming that it was one of his best and not too rough for a relative novice to ride. Luther had barely settled himself in the saddle, trying not to gasp at how high off the ground he was, when Morgan rode out of the stable on a big gelding whose hide had a peculiar golden sheen. Garrett Claiborne followed on another mount rented from Amos. The three men swung into Buckskin's main street and headed out of the settlement.
You sit a saddle like you've done it before.
I ride in one of the parks in San Francisco.
That was true, as far as it went. Luther had ridden only a few times, most recently about 6 months earlier. He knew enough about it, though, to stay in the saddle without a great deal of awkward bouncing. He had about the same level of experience with firearms. He had been on a few hunting trips as a young man and had gone target shooting a couple of times. He knew which end of the gun the bullet came out of, as the old saying went, and he was confident that in the event of trouble, he wouldn't be a total liability. He hoped that would be the case anyway. They left the town behind and headed toward the Crown Royal Mine. Luther had never been out there and had only a vague idea of where it was located. He had seen it on a map that was pinned to the wall of Tip Woodford's office. But since he had never been in the area before, the landmarks shown on the map didn't mean much to him.
You think Jessica Monroe might be trying to stir up some trouble between the Crown Royal and the Alhambra again?
I doubt it. She wouldn't have anything to gain from it. And anyway, she's not the type. If her husband wanted something, he might have sent a crew of gunnies to get it, but Hamish Monroe's dead. I think Mrs. Monroe's probably content just to sit back and let the Alhambra earn however much it will before the silver peters out.
As it likely will, sooner or later.
Good or bad, most things come to an end.
It took about an hour of riding to reach the Crown Royal, and by that time, Luther's muscles were beginning to ache from being in the saddle. He didn't say anything about the discomfort, though. Garrett Claiborne pointed out a thick growth of pines about 100 yards from the mine office. The stamp mill was clearly visible off to one side, and so was the entrance to the mine tunnel a short distance up the hill.
There's a stand of trees where the bushwhackers were hidden.
Yeah. They were close enough to have ventilated some of the hombres working here if they wanted to. Let's see what we can find.
Frank turned the gold-colored horse toward the trees. Luther and Claiborne followed him. When the three men reached the trees, Morgan dismounted and led his horse into the pines. Claiborne and Luther followed suit. Morgan pointed out several sets of hoof prints and even hunkered down to study the marks more closely.
Sometimes a horseshoe will have something distinctive about it that makes the prints it leaves easy to identify. That's not really the case here. Wolf!
A wolf leaped out of the brush, startling Luther and sending fear coursing along his veins. He reached for his rifle, thinking that the massive beast might attack Morgan and try to rip out his throat. Instead, the big shaggy gray animal bounded up to Morgan's side with his tongue lolling out of his mouth in what appeared to be a grin.
What in the world?
That's Wolf. Well, he was with us all the time. Didn't you see him?
No, I didn't. I thought it was a wild animal.
Part wolf, maybe. I never asked him, and he hasn't volunteered the information. Wolf, search.
Wolf lowered his muzzle to the ground and started sniffing around the prints left by the horses. After a few moments, he stiffened and his hackles rose.
I thought he might pick up a familiar scent. These hoof prints might not be all that distinctive, but Wolf never forgets something once he smelled it.
He knows these horses?
Or the man who was riding one of them. The same fella took a couple of shots at me almost a week ago when Conrad and Rebel and I were heading for Buckskin.
You're talking about that ambush you believe was set up after somebody stole that letter you sent me?
Yeah, the letter you never got. Somebody saw it, recognized my name on it, and snagged it in hopes of finding out when I was going to be arriving in Buckskin. Somebody who didn't want me to get there alive.
Dex Brighton.
Could be, but there's no way of knowing for sure. Yet. Brighton didn't try to ambush me himself, or else Wolf would have caught his scent in town, as much as Brighton has been around. But he could have hired somebody to kill me, and he could have hired the same hombre and some partners of his to carry out this attack on the mine.
But why? I mean, I suppose Brighton might not want you around because he's trying to bully the Lucky Lizard away from Tip Woodford, and he knows that you and Tip are friends. But what does the Crown Royal have to do with any of that? This mine isn't connected to the Lucky Lizard case at all.
There's one connection. Me.
Luther was thinking the same thing. And as those thoughts went through his head, he happened to glance up at a rocky knob some 300 yards behind Morgan. The sun struck a bright, almost blinding reflection off something up there.
Look out, Marshal!
Something struck Luther a heavy blow and knocked him backward so that he sprawled on the ground. Frank caught a glimpse of blood spurting from the lawyer's arm. He whirled around, since the shot had come from behind him. In the same motion, he reached for the butt of the Winchester that stuck up from the saddle boot strapped to Goldie and pulled the weapon from its sheath.
Garrett! Get Turnbuckle out of here!
Frank saw a spurt of orange flame from the muzzle of a gun. The bullet struck a pine tree about 5 feet to his right. Frank knew the rifleman would try to correct his aim, so he darted toward the spot where the previous shot had struck. Sure enough, the next bullet screamed through the air to his left. He ducked behind the thick trunk, braced the Winchester's barrel against it, and opened fire. Frank heard more shots coming from behind him, and glanced over his shoulder to see that Claiborne had dragged Turnbuckle behind some of the trees and rocks, then gotten his own rifle and was joining in the fight. The Together, they poured lead toward the knob where the bushwhacker was hidden. A couple of return shots struck the tree Frank was using for cover. But after that, the rifleman must have given it up as a bad job. Frank didn't hear any more shots coming from up there. Nor did he see any tendrils of powder smoke climbing into the clear air above the knoll.
Hold your fire, Garrett! Think the varmint's gone.
How can you be sure?
Can't. That's why we're gonna wait right here for a few minutes, just in case he's trying to trick us. How's Turnbuckle?
Hurting like blazes, but I don't think he's hit too bad. It looked like the slug just creased his arm. He looks pretty shook up, though. Guess he's not used to getting shot.
Nobody ever gets used to that, I reckon.
Frank watched the knob where the would-be assassin had hidden and saw no sign of movement.
You think that's our man?
Likely. Give it a few more minutes. Cover me. I'm gonna see if I can get Turnbuckle back on his horse.
Let me do that. If anybody needs covering, you're a better shot than I am, Frank.
Go ahead. I'll keep an eye on those rocks where the hombre was hiding.
Claiborne leaned his rifle against the tree he was using for cover and ran back to the spot where he had left Turnbuckle. Claiborne lifted Luther to his feet and then half carried, half dragged him toward their mounts. The horses had drifted back deeper into the trees when the shooting started, so they had remained relatively safe.
I got him in the saddle, Frank!
Head for the mine office. I'll bring up the rear.
As Frank began withdrawing, he grabbed up Claiborne's rifle and tucked it under his arm while still holding his own Winchester ready to fire. Frank put his rifle into the saddle boot, then holding Claiborne's weapon, swung up onto the gelding's back and sent it loping after the horses carrying his two companions. In a matter of minutes, they reached the building that housed the Crown Royal's office. Frank had caught up to Claiborne and Turnbuckle by then, so he dismounted quickly and helped Claiborne get the wounded lawyer out of the saddle. Turnbuckle still seemed a little stunned, and his face was drained of color from the shock of being shot. Frank saw a crimson stain on the sleeve of Turnbuckle's coat, but it didn't look like the wound on his arm had bled a dangerous amount. With Frank on one side of him and Claiborne on the other, they didn't waste any time getting Turnbuckle into the office and lowering him into the chair behind Claiborne's desk. Frank wheeled around upon hearing the door, his hand going to the Colt on his hip, but it was only a couple of the miners who crowded into the office. He recognized both of them from their visits to Buckskin.
We heard shots, Mr. Claiborne. Are you all right?
Fine, but Mr. Turnbuckle here got creased.
Who was doing the shooting?
We don't know. He was hidden in the rocks on that big knoll to the northeast.
Want us to go take a look around up there, boss?
Claiborne looked at Frank, deferring the decision to him.
No, boys. Just steer clear there for now, if you would. I'll go check it out later, once I've seen to Mr. Turnbuckle's wound.
Need a doctor.
We'll get you some medical attention back in Buckskin. Right now, though, we need to make sure we can get the bleeding stopped in that arm.
I think my arm was shot off.
Your arm's not shot off. That first bullet just nicked it. Likely would have blown my brains out, though, if you hadn't yelled and jumped at me. It came that close to my head before it hit you.
Turnbuckle nodded, but Frank wasn't sure if the lawyer really understood what he was saying or not. He worked Turnbuckle's suit coat off, then ripped the shirt sleeve down to expose the wound. As Claiborne had guessed, the slug had ripped a shallow furrow along the outside of Turnbuckle's upper left arm. Blood had run down to his elbow.
You got a bottle of whiskey in that filing cabinet, don't you, Garrett?
I do.
Get it and a clean cloth if you got one.
Of course.
Sorry to have to tell you this, Mr. Turnbuckle, but it's gonna burn a lot worse before it gets any better.
Just warn me first.
Sure.
Frank then, with no warning at all, poured the whiskey over the bullet crease. Turnbuckle opened his mouth like he was going to scream, but no sound came out. After a moment, his head fell back.
He's passed out.
Probably a good thing. That wound's not bleeding bad. We'll tie it up, and he'll be fine until I can get him back into Buckskin.
Well, you won't be taking him back there alone. I'll be going with you, and so will some of my men. That bushwhacker was after you, Frank. Somebody tried to kill you. Again.
Sure looked like it, all right.
The attack on the mine earlier was just to lure you out here so that the killer could make another try for you. And I played right into his hands by running straight to Buckskin to tell you what happened.
You didn't have much choice in the matter, and you weren't alone either. Conrad was with you.
Yes, but this mine is my responsibility. And I almost got you killed by going to you for help.
Don't start thinking like that, Garrett. There's only one person to blame for Turnbuckle being wounded and me nearly getting ventilated. And that's the son of a buck who pulled the trigger.
Well, I suppose you're right about that. Still, I don't like being used that way.
Don't blame you a bit for feeling that way. So he's coming around. Take a slug of this, Mr. Turnbuckle.
The lawyer's eyes opened wide as the whiskey burned its way down his gullet and landed in his stomach.
My God! What was that?
Whiskey. Strictly for medicinal purposes, you know.
Some of Turnbuckle's strength seemed to have returned. He even reached for the bottle.
Arm doesn't hurt quite so bad now. Must be good medicine.
Think you're up to riding back to Buckskin?
Of course. I can make it. I'll be fine.
I want 6 men, armed with rifles and mounted on saddle horses, back here in 10 minutes.
Yes, sir, Mr. Claiborne.
I appreciate the thought, Garrett, but I don't need an escort back to town. I've been taking care of myself for a long time, you know.
Of course you have. But now you have Mr. Turnbuckle to look after, too. Whoever that bushwhacker was, he'll be less likely to try another shot at you if you're surrounded by me and my men.
I still own half of this mine, you know. And I'm the marshal of Buckskin.
Yes, but with all due respect, sir, your jurisdiction as a lawman runs out at the edge of the settlement. And I've always had the authority to assign whatever tasks I saw fit to the men who work here at the mine.
All right. I'm much obliged for the help. I want to take a look up on that knoll before we start back to town, though.
Shall I come with you?
No, stay here with Turnbuckle. I'll have Wolf with me. He'll be enough company right now.
Frank left the office and found Wolf waiting outside with the horses.
Come on.
Frank swung up into the saddle. Frank pulled his Winchester from the boot again as he turned Goldie toward the rocky knob where the bushwhacker had lurked, waiting for his target to show up after being summoned from Buckskin by Conrad and Claiborne.
Wolf, search.
Frank sent Wolf on ahead to make sure no one was hiding on the knoll. The big cur bounded away eagerly, happy to be on the hunt again. No man could have asked for a more dependable trail partner. When Wolf came loping back, his tongue lolling from his mouth, Frank knew that the coast was clear. The bushwhacker really was gone. Approaching the knob from this side, the slope was too steep for Goldie to ascend it comfortably, so Frank dismounted and went the rest of the way on foot, carrying the rifle with him. When he got to the top and looked around in the rocks, he found a few scuff marks that he assumed had been left by the bushwhacker's boots. Wolf confirmed that by sniffing at the ground.
Same hombre, eh, boy? We'll cross trails with him again and settle up the score one of these days.
The slope was gentler on this side. Frank walked down into a grove of aspen and found where the rifleman had left his horse. The freshness of the droppings on the ground there were proof enough of that. Again, there was nothing distinctive about the few hoof prints Frank found.
So, what do we know?
He paused to consider the facts. It was a long shot from the top of the knoll to where Frank, Claiborne, and Turnbuckle had been standing, but certainly within range for a man who's good with a Winchester. The bushwhacker had been good. He had come too blasted close with all of his shots. That told Frank he was a professional. Frank had dodged 2 attempts by the man to kill him. How much longer, he had to wonder, could that sort of luck hold out? Of course, he wasn't going to leave it to luck. Frank was going to find out for sure who was trying to kill him and why. He knew a good starting place. Dex Brighton. Frank rode back down to the mine office. The armed men Claiborne had sent for were gathered there, along with horses. These were miners, not professional fighting men, but they were tough and canny, and as Frank looked around at them, he knew they would be good allies. Claiborne helped Turnbuckle out of the office. The lawyer was steadier on his feet now than he had been right after he was wounded, but he swayed a little and looked rather bleary-eyed as Claiborne helped him across the porch. Frank guessed that Turnbuckle had had a few more slugs from that whiskey bottle.
Find anything?
No more than we did before, when we were looking at the sign those other gunmen left.
You agree that it was just a scheme to get at you, Mr. Morgan?
That's the only thing that makes sense. So I reckon I'm obliged for the company on the way back to town.
Well, we're glad to go with you. Some of you men give me a hand with Mr. Turnbuckle here.
I've been shot.
Yes, sir, you have. But you'll be just fine.
Badge of honor? It keeps moving.
With help from several of the miners, Turnbuckle climbed up into his saddle. Then the group of riders started toward Buckskin. Morgan rode beside Turnbuckle on his left, with Garrett Claiborne on his right. The miners from the Crown Royal were ranged around them, rifles held ready across their saddles in case they ran into trouble.
Sorry I wasn't any more help.
You were plenty of help. There's a good chance I'd be dead now if not for what you did.
Really? Wouldn't think somebody like me could do something like that, would you?
Just take it easy. We'll have you back to Buckskin before you know it, and then the doctor can take a look at that arm. How are you doing, Mr. Turnbuckle?
I'm fine. My arm hurts, of course, but I suppose that's to be expected when you've been shot.
Well, it always hurt when I got shot.
Have you been wounded in battle often?
More than I like to think about. I got bullet scars all over, and a few from knives and tomahawks, too. I was shot up so bad one time it took me several months to recover.
And yet you come back for more.
Life hasn't given me much choice in the matter. One reason I drifted around so much over the years was that I was looking for a place where I might find some lasting peace and quiet. Took me a long time before I realized that probably wasn't going to happen. Buckskin has come closer to that for me than most places. And even here, it seems like a week doesn't go by without somebody shooting at me.
What a terrible thing to have following you around and hanging over your head. You always have to travel in the shadow of death.
That's about the size of it. It's not going to change anytime soon, either. At least not as long as Brighton is around trying to steal the Lucky Lizard.
Well, the judge will be here in a few days, and we ought to be able to move pretty quickly with the case. Once Brighton has lost, do you think he'll slink away with his tail between his legs?
No telling. I got a feeling he's not going to be a gracious loser. Assuming that the judge doesn't rule in his favor.
He won't. I'm going to destroy his claim, especially if I can send some wires from Carson City and get the replies back in time.
Write out the messages. I'll see to it that they get sent. There are several fellas in town I can trust to take the wires to Carson City and then wait for the replies.
Not long after that, the group of riders reached Buckskin. At the edge of town, Morgan thanked Claiborne and the miners, and the men turned their mounts around and headed back to the Crown Royal. Luther and Morgan headed their mounts on down the street toward the office of Dr. William Garland. Diana must have been watching for them, because she hurried out of the mining company office and met them in the road. Her father followed her out of the office. Luther was still coatless, and the bloodstain on his torn shirt sleeve was clearly visible, as was the makeshift bandage tied around his arm.
Oh, no! You're hurt, Mr. Turnbuckle!
Call me, Claudius.
How bad is it, Frank?
Not too bad. The bullet just creased Mr. Turnbuckle's arm. I would have been a lot worse off if he hadn't acted when he did, though. He spoiled a bushwhacker's play for me.
Really?
Quickly, Morgan filled in Diana and her father about what had happened at the Crown Royal.
Mr. Turnbuckle and I are on our way down to Doc Garland's office so that the doctor can take a look at that crease.
Do you need any help?
We'll be fine.
Yes, don't worry about me, Miss Woodford. I've suffered much worse than this in the pursuit of justice.
I bet a hat Brighton had something to do with the attack on the mine and that dry gulch attempt on you, Frank.
That's what Mr. Turnbuckle and I think, too. And Garrett Claiborne goes along with it.
How is Garrett? He wasn't hurt, was he?
No. Claudius here's the only one who got elected. I heard the nomination speech, though, when that slug went right past my ear.
Morgan heeled his horse into motion again. He had the reins of Luther's mount, so Luther had no choice but to go with him. And, as a matter of fact, his arm was starting to hurt a little worse, so Luther thought it would be a good idea for the doctor to look at it. He turned slightly in his saddle and lifted his good arm in a small wave of farewell to Diana and her father.
This doctor of yours, he knows what he's doing?
Yeah, he's a good sawbones. He'll be able to patch you up better than I could. Your arm should be fine.
I imagine that having the arm in a sling will look fairly dashing, though. Might make a good impression on a jury if it comes to that.
Yeah, counselor. You're a lawyer, all right.
At one fairly recent point in the settlement's existence, Professor Henry Burton was the closest thing to a doctor that Buckskin had. When the town began to grow as news of the silver spread, Dr. Garland had arrived and hung out his shingle. He was young, not that long out of medical school, but he had proven to be a good physician and was tougher than his rather mild appearance indicated. While Frank looked on, Garland carefully removed the bandage from Claudius Turnbuckle's arm, using a wet sponge to sop away the dried blood that made the cloth want to cling to the wound. Turnbuckle turned pale again at this fresh pain, but he didn't moan or cry out. Frank could tell by the tense set of the lawyer's jaw that he was gritting his teeth.
You did a good job, Marshal. I think it'd be a good idea, though, to clean out the wound a little better and take some stitches in it before I bandage it again.
Stitches? That will leave a scar, won't it?
A small one, but your sleeve will cover it.
All right, Doctor. Do whatever needs to be done.
Well, first off, I'm going to give you a dose of laudanum.
Is that absolutely necessary?
I think you'll be a lot more comfortable if I do.
All right, Doctor. Go ahead.
Garland took a small brown bottle from a cabinet and poured a dose of laudanum from it. Frank didn't like the sickly sweet smell of the stuff and was glad when Turnbuckle downed it. Within moments, a sleepy glaze came over Turnbuckle's eyes. Frank and Garland stretched him out on the examination table, and Garland went to work cleaning and stitching up the wound in his arm.
What's he saying?
I don't know. I've learned not to pay any attention to what patients say after they've been given an opiate. It usually doesn't make any sense.
Frank leaned closer anyway, trying to make out the words the lawyer was slurring.
Turnbuckle. Luther.
Finally shaking his head, Frank gave up on the effort. Turnbuckle seemed more asleep than awake now. It didn't take long for Garland to finish with his efforts, and he tied the bandage around Turnbuckle's arm in place.
I'll fix up a sling for him to wear on that arm so he can keep it still.
He'll be glad to hear that. He thought a sling would look dashing. I expect black silk would be best.
I think I can manage that. I also think it'd be a good idea for him to stay here for a while, at least until the laudanum wears off.
That's fine. I appreciate what you've done for him, Doctor. I think I should warn you, though. There's a possibility that whoever took those shots at us may make another try on Mr. Turnbuckle here.
Really? No offense, Marshal, but I just assumed that you were the target and Mr. Turnbuckle was hit by accident.
Well, that's what I figured at first, too. But that might not be the case. Are you sure you want him to stay here?
No one's going to bother him in the middle of town. Besides, I have a medical responsibility and I'm not going to shirk it.
All right, Doctor. I just wanted you to know. I'll be back by to check on him later.
If you don't mind my asking, Marshal, does this have something to do with that man who claims he owns Mayor Woodford's mine?
That's what I'm going to try to find out right now.
Frank knew that Dex Brighton was usually in his hotel room or at the top-notch saloon. He checked at the hotel first and was told that Brighton wasn't there. So he headed for the top-notch. Catamount Jack intercepted him on the way.
I heard what happened out there, Frank. Are you all right?
I'm fine.
That lawyer fella got hit, though.
Yeah, but he should be all right, too. He'll be laid up for a short time, but he'll still be able to handle the court case when it comes up next week.
Brighton. Got to be.
That's what I thought, too. I'm looking for him now, to see what he's got to say for himself.
Nothing good, I'll bet. I'm coming with you.
Glad for the company.
When they entered the Top Notch, which was a narrow, dingy establishment that didn't really live up to its name, Frank looked around the place and didn't see Brighton. A balding man named Mason was behind the bar, wearing a dirty apron. He had a prominent Adam's apple, and it bobbed up and down nervously as Frank and Catamount Jack approached the bar.
Well, howdy, Marshal. Deputy. You fellas want a drink? It's on the house.
No, thanks. We're looking for Dex Brighton.
Well, haven't seen him, Marshal. Sorry.
Your eyesight's not very good, Mason.
The words came from a man who was sitting alone at one of the felt-covered poker tables, dealing a hand of solitaire. Frank turned to look at him and recognized him as a gambler called Winston.
What do you mean by that, Winston?
Brighton wasn't here till about 45 minutes ago, about the same time you and that lawyer fella arrived to such commotion, in fact. Someone came in here talking about how you and Turnbuckle had been shot out at the Crown Royal Mine and how Turnbuckle was wounded. Brighton left right after that. I don't see how you missed that, Mason.
I was busy, all right. Sorry, Marshal, but I can't be expected to keep up with the comings and goings of everybody who comes in here. I got work to do.
Sure, Mason, I understand. I don't suppose you heard Brighton say where he's going.
He didn't say anything about it, at least not in my hearing.
Why are you being helpful, Winston? You and Brighton have some trouble between you?
I wouldn't call it trouble. He's won more than his share of poker hands since he's been in town, though.
You think he's cheating?
No. He's winning fair and square. That's even more annoying. I don't mind losing, but I hate losing to an honest man.
All right. I'm obliged. And I figure I should tell you, when word of this gets to Brighton, you're liable to have made an enemy of him.
I'll worry about that tomorrow, if I get around to it.
Brighton lit a shuck when he heard that the ambush he set up didn't do for you, Frank.
That's the way it sounds to me, too.
You reckon he'll be back? Or has he left Buckskin for good?
Oh, I think we can count on him being back. He's not gonna let us off that easy.
Brighton seethed as he rode toward the abandoned mine that his men were using as a hideout. Things had been on the verge of working out perfectly. In a lucky break, the lawyer Turnbuckle had ridden out to the Crown Royal with Morgan, and Stample had had a chance to get rid of both men. If he had been able to handle that simple chore, then kill the circuit judge a few days hence, then Tip Woodford would have been left without any powerful friends or any legal recourse. He could have been pressured into accepting Brighton's claim on the Lucky Lizard. Probably all it would have taken was a subtle threat to his daughter's safety. Instead, Morgan and Turnbuckle had escaped from the ambush attempt, even though Turnbuckle had been slightly wounded, according to what Brighton had heard. With the two men still alive to help him, Woodford would remain stubborn. Worse still, Morgan would be on the alert now, more so than ever after two attempts on his life in the past week or so. The man was no fool. Brighton was still several hundred yards away from the mouth of the abandoned mine when a voice called out from behind a boulder beside the trail.
Hold it right there, mister.
Brighton reined to a halt. His right hand moved toward the butt of the pistol he carried in a shoulder rig under his coat.
Don't you try it! Who are you? What do you want out here?
Brighton realized that this unseen gunman must be a guard that Stample had posted. That meant he was one of the hired killers recruited by Stample.
You damned fool! I'm the man you're drawing your pay from!
The sentry stepped out from behind the boulder. He was lean and unshaven, with dull eyes that indicated he wasn't too bright.
I don't know you, mister, and I ain't taking no chance.
Go tell Stample that I'm here. My name is Brighton.
The guard looked like he might be disposed to argue the matter some more, but at that moment, Brighton looked toward the old mine and saw a figure loping toward them on horseback. As the rider came closer, Brighton recognized him as Cy Stample.
You blame lunkhead! This is the boss!
Well, nobody ever said nothing to me about the boss coming out here. I figure you met up with him in town, Stample.
I do when I have to. Now get back behind that rock. Keep your eyes open for somebody who's not supposed to be here. Come on into camp, boss.
I'm sure you can guess why I'm here, Stample.
Morgan, you got away again.
And so did that lawyer, Claudius Turnbuckle. You had a shot at both of them.
I would have got him, too. Morgan hadn't moved just as I squeezed off my first shot. That's when the lawyer got hit, I reckon. Is he dead?
He's just wounded. A bullet crease on his arm.
Wasn't for bad luck, I wouldn't have no luck at all, I reckon. If I had to miss Morgan, I should at least got the lawyer.
Yes, you should have.
If I'd have got Morgan with my first shot, it wouldn't have been any trouble to pick off Turnbuckle. Chances are, he would have started running around like a chicken with his head cut off.
Oh, we'll never know.
They had reached the tunnel mouth. Dex saw several hard-faced, roughly dressed men lounging around the mine entrance. All of them were heavily armed, and their cold-eyed gazes told Brighton they were killers. Stample introduced Brighton to the men. Brighton didn't bother trying to remember any of their names. They didn't mean anything to him. They were just tools, like a gun or a deck of cards.
You want a drink, boss?
No. Morgan's going to be on the lookout now. Two attempts on his life will have warned him that something is going on. Chances are he'll blame it on me, too.
Well, you're paying for it, ain't you?
Yes, but he can't prove that. I'm counting on things staying that way, too. I don't give a damn what Morgan suspects as long as he doesn't have any evidence to link me to those bushwhack tries.
We'll go after him again. The whole bunch of us this time. We'll get him for you, boss.
Not now. I want you to lie low until that stagecoach holdup we spoke about. Get rid of the judge, and then we'll deal with Morgan and Turnbuckle later.
You sure?
I'm certain. I want to lull Morgan into forgetting those shots you took at him.
You really reckon that's going to happen with a gunfighter like him?
Maybe not, but we're going to try. Just don't foul up the job with the judge.
He's as good as dead.
A check at Amos Hillman's stable told Frank that Brighton had picked up the horse he was renting and ridden out of town earlier in the afternoon, shortly after he left the Top Notch, according to the gambler called Winston. He then kept his eyes open for Brighton's return to the settlement, and that effort was rewarded late in the afternoon when Frank saw Brighton ride into town and head for the livery stable. By the time Brighton dismounted and strolled back out of the barn, Frank was there waiting for him.
Marshal?
Hold on a minute, Brighton. Where have you been this afternoon?
What business is that of the law's?
It was more in the nature of a personal question.
In that case, I don't see any reason for me to answer it.
Humor me.
All right. It doesn't really matter anyway. I was just out taking a ride in the countryside. It's good exercise, you know?
You hear that somebody tried to kill Mr. Turnbuckle and me while we were out at the Crown Royal Mine earlier today?
As a matter of fact, I did. Or rather, I heard that someone took a shot at you. I didn't know the lawyer was involved. And frankly, shouldn't you be used to people trying to kill you by now, Morgan? You've been a gunman practically all your life, from what I've heard. You've lost more than one wife to bullets meant for you, haven't you?
You think you're so damn smart coming in here and claiming things that aren't yours. Thinking you can push folks around and get everything you want. You're gonna find out that the law doesn't work that way.
You're a fine one to talk about the law, Morgan. You pin on a badge and you think it can wipe out all the things you've done, all the men you've gunned down. You're just a hired killer. That's all you've ever been.
I never hired out my gun. Not like that.
Tell that to all the dead men whose blood is on your hands. Things are going to be different around here when I'm the owner of the Lucky Lizard, Morgan. Then I'll be the most powerful man in these parts, and you'll be out of a job. You'll have to go back to being a drifting killer with no place to call home.
The next morning, Frank sent Phil Noonan to Carson City with a handful of sealed messages that Phil was supposed to turn over to the telegrapher in the Western Union office there. Then Phil was to wait for the replies before he came back to Buckskin. Frank made sure that Phil understood the possible danger before he took the job.
Don't worry, Marshal. I'll slip out of town without anybody knowing about it. Besides, that pony of mine is pretty fast. I can outrun most trouble.
I'd go to Carson City myself, Phil. But I gotta keep an eye on things here so they don't boil over.
You just tend to your job, Marshal. I'll be back with the replies to those wives just as soon as I can.
Claudius Turnbuckle did indeed look dashing in the black silk sling, Frank thought as he entered the hotel dining room on Monday evening, making one of his regular checks to be sure that Turnbuckle was all right. Turnbuckle had taken his midday meal in the dining room, and he was there for supper, too, joined by Diana Woodford. Diana wasn't the only one at the table with Turnbuckle, though. Garrett Claiborne was there, too. Frank took his hat off as he approached the table. Diana was talking animatedly to Turnbuckle, who sat there with a smile on his face, while Claiborne looked on with a slight frown. Diana broke off with whatever she was talking about and looked up to greet Frank.
Oh, hello, Frank. We were about to have supper. Would you like to join us? We've already ordered.
Thanks, Diana. Don't mind if I do.
What can I get you, Marshall?
Let me have the usual steak and potatoes with all the trimmings and coffee, of course. Thanks.
We were just talking about the court case. I guess the circuit judge is still supposed to arrive on tomorrow's stage.
I haven't heard any different.
Have there been any replies to the telegrams I sent?
Not yet.
I really need the information that I sent for. If I don't get it, I may have to ask for a continuance.
How likely is it that the judge will grant one?
Not very, I'm afraid. A circuit judge has to adhere to a fairly strict schedule. If I'm not ready to present our case, the entire affair might have to be postponed until the judge comes around again.
Sounds to me like you should have prepared a little faster.
I was busy getting shot at and saving Marshal Morgan's life.
I was there, remember?
There's still time. The stagecoach won't get here until the middle of the day, and the judge probably won't want to hold court until the next morning, so there's no need to worry about it just yet.
I suppose not.
The food arrived then, and for the next little while, everyone was busy eating. The atmosphere of tension that hung around the table dissipated a little. Steak and potatoes had a way of doing that, Frank thought. As they were finishing up the meal, Frank suddenly straightened in his chair as he saw Dex Brighton appear in the arched entrance to the dining room. Brighton looked as smug as ever. He had a tall, stiff-backed man with him. The stranger wore an expensive suit, had iron gray hair, and a brush of a mustache. Brighton saw Frank, Diana, Turnbuckle, and Claiborne sitting at the table and pointed them out to his companion. Then the two men started across the dining room toward the table.
What do we do, Marshal?
Just take it easy. Brighton's not going to try to do anything here in the hotel dining room. I'm sort of curious who that fella with him is, too.
Good evening. Turnbuckle, I thought you might like to meet the man who's going to destroy you in court. This is my attorney, the esteemed Colonel Desmond O'Hara from Chicago.
Hello, Turnbuckle. I've heard of you. Always nice to meet a fellow counselor at law, even though we'll be opponents in the courtroom.
It's good to meet you too, Colonel. When did you get into town? The stagecoach doesn't arrive until tomorrow.
Oh, I have my own transportation. Since no one has introduced us, my dear, I'll take care of that myself. Colonel Desmond O'Hara, at your service. You're Miss Woodford?
That's right.
I assure you, I bear no ill will toward you or your father. When the trial begins, I'll simply be representing my client to the best of my ability, as is my duty.
Of course.
And you'd be the famous gunman, I suppose. I've heard a great deal about you, Morgan.
Can't say as I ever heard of you, Colonel.
Mr. Turnbuckle, are you acquainted with the judge we'll be facing in this case, sir?
All I know is his name, Judge Grampus. I've never appeared before him.
Nor have I, so we'll be on equal footing there.
Let's go, Colonel. I'll buy you a drink and we can talk about the case.
All right. I'd like to get some of the details straight in my mind. Good evening. I'll see you in court, Turnbuckle.
I'll be looking forward to it.
The Colonel seemed pretty confident of victory, Turnbuckle.
No more than I am.
No offense, Mr. Turnbuckle, but he's considerably older than you, too.
Age doesn't necessarily mean wisdom or legal skills. More importantly, we have the facts of the case on our side. We'll prevail no matter what Brighton throws at us, Diana.
I hope so. It would destroy my father to lose the Lucky Lizard.
That will never happen.
Frank drank his coffee and quietly hoped that the lawyer would be able to keep that promise.